made it hard to pretend this was official business, but I tried to cling to that illusion as I waited for him to open the door.
Something new wrong at the tavern?
Mason's raised eyebrows said that he knew there wasn't, but he'd let me have that pretense as he held the door open, ushered me into the house. No, everything's fine. I drove by there on my way home. I just wanted to see how you were doing. I played it casual, like checking on him in the middle of the night was something I did all the time. The small entrance hall opened into a living room that was almost bare, only a single couch and an end table with a lamp. No art or pictures on the wall. I'd been in his parents' place before, and clutter didn't even begin to describe their property. I guess that minimalism might be Mason's grand rebellion.
I'm good.
Mason looked me up and down.
You still haven't eaten yet, have you?
I'm okay, I lied, willing my stomach not to growl. The rest of me was close to growling for a whole different reason. Mason was shirtless. The only thing he had on was a pair of stretchy shorts. Damp hair said that he too had recently showered. But it was his chest that mesmerized me. Far fuzzier than I would have expected, and as muscular as those biceps of his. His nipples were a deep tan color, and pebbled from the night air.
No, you're not.
Mason jerked his thumb for me to follow him to the kitchen.
I was just about to make myself something anyway. You good with an omelet?
Could be. I didn't want to sound too eager for him to feed me. The kitchen was a narrow L-shaped room with an eating nook on one end and what looked like the original 1950s cabinets. The stove was probably about that old too, but Mason slapped a space-age-looking stainless steel pan on the burner and set to collecting ingredients from a fridge that didn't match the other appliances. He tossed me a plastic bag that held the same bread he served at the restaurant.
Can I trust you with the toaster?
You can trust me. I hoped I wasn't lying. I owned 3 toasters because I kept buying new ones, hoping something different would stop me from burning things. Then Mom had gifted me a toaster oven that required an engineering degree to operate, but looked nice enough on my counter. I glanced around Mason's kitchen and had to stifle a groan. Sure enough, he owned the same MIT-level toaster oven, just waiting to confound me. He must have sensed my apprehension because he turned from cracking eggs.
Here, I'll do it. It's tricky.
Smiling slyly, he made it appear like no such thing, getting the toast arranged just so and the toaster counting down like a rocket launch, all while he kept whisking the eggs with his other hand. You have plates. I can manage setting the table.
Cabinet over here.
Mason pointed to the corner cabinet next to where he stood at the stove. Heck. Now if I wanted to be helpful, I was going to have to get all up in his personal space, which was exactly what you came over for. No, I'd come over to check on him. And yeah, on my walk over, I might have entertained the idea of him greeting me wordlessly with another of those soul-melting kisses, and nature simply taking its course from there. But he hadn't gone that route, not that I was surprised. This whole meal-sharing thing was not what I was prepared for, and since Mason wasn't acting like a guy up for kissing, I wasn't sure how to handle myself. Coming up behind him to grab the plates, I tried hard to avoid brushing his body. But at the last second, Mason turned, and there we were, face to face, chest to chest.
Hi.
Mason grinned at me, a smile full of sin that said he knew exactly what I'd been thinking, hoping, coming here. He brushed a kiss across my cheek before returning to the eggs on the stove, normal as could be.
You're seriously cute, all flustered.
Huh. Guess he was up for kissing. But
I can hear you thinking, Nash. Set the table, he ordered.
I'd been right.
My name did sound good on those lips, and it had been far, far too long since I'd been simply Nash, the slightly confused, more than a little turned-on man, and not Flint, the figurehead. I put the plates on the table and found silverware in the drawer closest to the table. In surprisingly short order, Mason produced an omelet that smelled of sausage and sharp cheese, and he rescued the bread just in time, all with the effortless ease of a man at home in his kitchen. Dividing the omelet in half, he served us before taking the seat opposite me. He took a deep breath, and I hoped like heck that he wasn't about to say grace. I hadn't had that ritual since Dad, and I didn't really want to associate Mason with those memories. "Why'd you really come here, Nash?" he asked instead. And for a second I almost wished he'd gone with the prayer. "To check on you," I answered automatically.
"Yeah, but why?"
"Because I needed to." Hell, he had me all frustrated. Man was lucky he was all the way across the table, or he would have found himself thoroughly kissed.
"Do you need to do this often, then?"
His voice was too carefully pitched to be casual. I finally got what he was after. He wanted to know if I made a habit of coming on to people. "No," I answered truthfully. "Never on duty, rarely locally, and never with someone who drives me as nuts as you do." This seemed to please him, and he nodded, blushing. Kryptonite, I tell you. If I hadn't already been gone on him, that blush would have done it. "Thanks," he mumbled before tucking into his food. The omelet was perfection. Crispy sausage pieces, creamy cheese, fluffy eggs, with just the right amount of seasoning. "Tell me how you did this," I asked, both to break the silence and because I wanted to know. Mason talking food was quietly addictive.
"Are you really curious, or are you just being polite?"
He laughed as he broke off a piece of toast. "I want to learn more. Who knows, you might inspire me to try cooking something for myself sometime."
"I'll happily give you lessons. Anytime you want to figure out how to make the basics, you just give me a call. Everyone should have at least one go-to late-night meal that doesn't come from a box."
I coughed at that, because all my late-night meals come from boxes, and he knew it. The idea of coming over here more often, letting Mason show me his tricks, was more than a little seductive. "Not sure that's a good idea," I muttered.
"Sure it is."
His grin was damn near lethal. The way it poked at me made me unhinged.
"Now, let's start with stocking your pantry for all the things you can do with eggs."
As he went on about the versatility of eggs, I kept thinking of all the things I wanted to do to him. I had a feeling we would get there before I came to my senses and headed home, and a delicious shiver of anticipation rocketed through me. I hadn't had that in forever, the knowledge that something was going to happen, but not yet, and not knowing what or when.
"I'm going to do a strawberry rhubarb pie this week," Mason said when he was done with his ode to eggs. "You want to come by early someday? Maybe before you have to be on duty? I'll show you how easy pie crust is."
Regret coursing through me, I shook my head. It was a pretty picture, him teaching me how to do a pie, us rolling out dough together. But that was all it could be, a picture. "I'll be sure to order a piece," I said. Mason sighed like he was disappointed for me, and I supposed I was too.
"How bad was the accident?"
he asked as he mopped up some melted cheese with his toast. "Bad. The driver will live, but we had to get the firefighters there with the jaws of life. I had no one that I talked shop with, and discussing details with him made my chest thump. Discussing his life and food stuff was easier. Candace, Holmes, was shaken up. She was first on the scene. But we spoke, and I told her she did all the right things. Who do you share with when you've had a bad day?
His head tilted, and his voice was so full of compassion I almost couldn't stand it.
I don't. No need to spill my guts.
It wasn't exactly a lie. I kept my bad days tucked in close against me, the weight pushing down on my shoulders until I sorted myself out. But something about Mason made me wish I were wired a little differently, made me wish I was more of a talker, or that I had a listener. But that way lay madness, so I pushed the thoughts aside.
Omelet done, I took my plate to the sink without looking at him. The old-fashioned kitchen didn't have a dishwasher, so I grabbed a sponge and the soap.
Mason added his plate to the sink and grabbed a towel to dry.
I'd never done something so domestic before. Steve and I never had much time for shared food, and none of my other rare, brief encounters were much interested in doing the dishes. I made quick work of the plates and silverware, and he got them dry and back in their spots.
"You're a bit of a neatnik, aren't you?" I asked.
His kitchen was almost Spartan, exactly 4 white plates and 4 matching forks in a tidy row of 3 pans on the pot rack.
"Guilty," he shrugged. "You know my family. I swore up and down I'd live differently when I moved out of my folks' place. I used to drive Philippe nuts how I never wanted to buy anything or keep clutter, but I refused to turn into them."
I didn't like hearing about this Philippe one bit.
"You're not gonna turn into your family," I said firmly. "You've already made better choices than most of them put together."
"You really think so?"
His smile this time was slow and cautious.
"Yeah." I dried my hands on the towel hanging from a hook by the sink, and let myself do what I'd been dying to do since I'd looked out my window and spotted his lights. I turned him to face me, hands on his broad shoulders. God, his skin was so warm and soft. Freckles dotted his shoulders, and just like his blush, the sight drove me crazy.
"You're a good man, Mason Hanks."
I wasn't talented with pretty words and offhand compliments, so that was the best I had. But apparently it was acceptable, because Mason smiled wider and looped his arms around my neck.
"So are you."
I might have been broader, but he was almost the same height. It was nice looking into his eyes, seeing him telegraph his intent right before he grazed his lips across mine. That first kiss had been all me, all my pounding drive for control, and need to claim him like some crazed caveman. This kiss was the polar opposite, tender and slow, and full of finesse as he led the way. He tasted salty at first, but that quickly gave way to the same addictive flavor I remembered from the first time. His lips were soft and surprisingly full, and the hitch in his breath right before he deepened the kiss nearly undid me. Growling, I took back a little control, exploring his mouth with my tongue. He met me eagerly, joyfully even, sucking on my tongue in a way that made my dick pulse. I pressed him back against the cabinets, giving in to the need to rock against him.
"Oh, fuck yes."
Mason tipped his head, giving me access to the column of his neck. His skin was slightly stubbly, and I welcomed the abrasion against my lips and tongue. I hadn't come in my pants since I'd been a teen. I'd fooled around with Troy long before he became hung up on Curtis. And I got hung up on myself and all the limitations that went along with being me. Mason revved me up far more than Troy or even Steve ever had, and climaxing just from rubbing on him was a definite possibility, especially the way he clung to me, meeting me thrust for thrust. I discovered all the spots on his neck that made him gasp and moan, trying not to leave marks, but it was hard, much as I needed him.
"Not enough."
Mason worked a hand between us,
working my belt like a man who knew what he wanted. And damn if that confidence wasn't sexy enough to have me groaning.
Fuck, Nash. Should have figured you'd be packing.
I was not one to preen at dick compliments, but my shoulders lifted at that. Before I could get with the program and return the groping, Mason had my dick out and was shoving his shorts down to mid-thigh. He wrapped a hand around both our dicks and started a slow stroke. Got to love a man who wasn't afraid to go after exactly what he needed.
Nash, God, this feels good.
He was a talker, and I loved that every bit as much as his blushes and confidence. He'd gone on about me packing, but his dick was plenty meaty. A thick, uncut column pressing up against my cock. Damp cockhead dragging against my own in the most blissful kind of torture.
I want to come, he moaned against my mouth, rucking my shirt so our bare torsos met. Kiss me, he demanded, and his mouth met mine hungrily.
His hand sped up, but it wasn't quite enough for me. I needed to feel him. Batting his hand away, I growled, "My turn."
"Oh, fuck yes."
He arched into my touch. My hand was bigger, allowing my grip to be that much tighter, and the increased friction had me moaning, too. He leaked copious amounts of pre-cum, coating my fist, and my mouth watered with the need to taste him.
"Not gonna last," he warned.
He kissed me as if I were his supply of oxygen.
"Do it," I murmured,
pulling away to kiss at his jaw and neck again. "Wanna feel you go."
"Come with me." "Oh, God."
His voice broke.
"Fuck. Gonna."
My fist got slicker as he came in big shutters, mouth finding mine for a last desperate kiss. The kiss was what set me off. I came on a low noise, fucking into my fist. Loving the way my cock slid against him, everything slippery and perfect. It felt like being tossed into the ocean from the cliffs on the southern edge of town, a long free fall with a hard crash into a roiling ocean of sensation that knocked out my wind and rendered me stupefied.
"Oh my God, Nash!"
Mason didn't seem to have the same trouble as me with speech.
"Not sure I've ever come so hard."
I grunted my agreement, still breathing too hard to talk. Mason reached for the towel, cleaned us both off while I struggled to make sense of what had just happened. Tossing the towel aside, he ghosted his lips across mine.
"Stay. I promise my round two is a hell of a lot better than that. Not that that wasn't terrific. But I've got a bed and a powerful need to get you all the way naked."
He grinned at me, and my chest clenched hard. God, I wanted that. But I'd given in to wanting and insanity enough for one evening. "I can't." Shaking my head, I let all my regret filter into the words. "Can't be here in the morning."
"I'll set an alarm."
Mason trailed off, obviously seeing something in my expression that inspired resignation.
"Or not. This is where you get all buttoned up and distant again, right?"
I sighed, hating that he already knew me so well, hating that it had to be like this.
"Yeah. Your loss."
He adjusted his shorts and tugged down my shirt. "Yes, it truly was." Another pleading look or word from him and I would have been a goner, following him to that bed. But Mason wasn't the begging type. And although I'd been crazy, there was a limit to my recklessness. There was only so long I could be Nash before all the weight of being Chief Flint returned, and with it, a deep sense of regret over my impulsive actions. Time to head back to the real world.
12. Mason. "No share of sexy again?" Adam asked as we went over the bar inventory together. Thursday afternoon was dead enough that we'd resorted to counting bottles. "Probably busy," I shrugged as if I hadn't really noticed. In reality, I'd been counting the hours since Tuesday's little late-night visit. Not that I was surprised that we hadn't seen Nash. I had been totally prepared for Nash to go all Flint as soon as we both got off. In fact, the second I'd seen him on my front porch, I'd known he would bolt if I spooked him hard enough. And apparently suggesting that we try that whole orgasm thing in my bed qualified. It had been almost surreal. One second he'd been Nash, the guy who couldn't cook and had zero flirting game and who kissed like he hadn't had it in decades. The next instant he'd been Flint again, shutting me out. Hell, Flint shut Nash out, too, stonewalling the parts of himself that I liked the best.
Probably for the best. You've had enough to keep you busy, what with the insurance and the window repair people.
Adam straightened a row of whiskey bottles.
Truth.
We'd had a glass repair place come for an estimate, which, as expected, turned out to be higher than we could afford without using the insurance. Fretting over potentially higher premiums was just one more worry in a never-ending stream of concerns. What if Adam was right, and we were the target of a hate crime? What if the rumors about the vandalism drove our already sparse customer base away? Could we really make a go of this business? So many people were counting on me, trusting me.
Speaking of Flint, did you get a copy of the police report for the insurance company?
No, I need to do that today. I had a plan for that, actually, but I needed Adam to head out to Coos Bay to get our beer order from the brewery before I put it in action. He might be my best friend, but I didn't need him up in my love life, or lack thereof.
Speaking of to-do lists, you should probably try to beat traffic if you're going to make it to the brewery.
Okay, okay. Wouldn't want to be pulled over for speeding. Adam dusted his hands on his jeans. Even in June, he still managed to rock the plaid shirt and beard. He left for his truck, and I fished out my phone.
Sorry to bug you, but how do I go about getting a copy of our police report?
Mason. There. No mention of Tuesday, but a bit underhanded. I knew perfectly well that I could go talk to the nice receptionist at City Hall for this business. Nash's reply was faster than I'd expected.
I'll bring one over. 20 minutes?
I smiled. I had him right where I wanted him. I'll put in an order for your usual. Have it waiting for you. Thanks. I waited for him to tell me not to bother on the food, but I'd also gambled on him not having eaten and not being able to resist the offer. I fist-pumped when his reply came in. Okay. It was stupid to get excited over Nash coming by, and stupider still to have a plan like this, but Tuesday had only been a taste of what I wanted with him. I wanted to teach him to cook and make him laugh and get busy on an actual bed. I knew exactly how foolish anything long-term between us would be, but Nash was an itch I wasn't done scratching. I put in the order for Nash's usual burger and made the salad myself, ignoring Logan's pointed look. He wasn't as much of a teaser as Adam, thank God, and I worked fast to avoid conversation. By the time Flint strode into the still-empty dining room, I had the food waiting at his usual table.
Your copies.
He held out a manila folder.
Thanks. That's awfully good service.
I forced my voice to be teasing, not nervous. Taking a seat, he gestured at the empty chair across from him.
Sit. We should probably talk.
I groaned, even though I'd been expecting this. I flopped into the chair.
This is where you tell me what a mistake the other night was, right? And how we can't go for a repeat?
You're a smart man.
Nash took a big bite of his burger. Ignoring the compliment, I leaned forward. There's no reason why we can't do that again. Discreetly, of course. You can't tell me that this is out of your system already.
Doesn't matter if it is.
Nash shrugged.
It wouldn't be a good idea to start something for a whole lot of reasons.
I'm not asking you to go steady here. But why can't we be friends? Secret friends who happen to get it on.
I don't do friends.
Liar. I searched my memories. Surely I'd heard of Flint having someone in town he was friendly with. His dispatcher, for certain. And he'd always been friendly enough with Everly and Dolly and some of the other shop owners. You're friends with Curtis. And hey, weren't you friends with Mr. Gabalski, the science teacher out at the high school? Thought I remembered you guys going fishing and stuff back when I was in school.
I've known Curtis since forever.
Nash gestured like that didn't really count. Then he did the most curious thing. He coughed, his neck going dusky red.
And Steve, Mr. Gabalski, was a friend. But that's long past.
I couldn't help it. My eyebrows shot up, and the words got away from me. Oh, my God! You were sleeping with him, weren't you? Why didn't I figure this out sooner?
Probably because I didn't want you to, he said levelly. And keep your voice down, please.
You were! I crowed, softer now. I wasn't sure why I felt so triumphant, having uncovered this secret side to Nash. You and Mr. Gabalski were totally a thing. What happened?
Steve moved to Ashland a few years back, took a better-paying job. No big drama.
His flush had spread to his cheeks. Ha! Lying again. Nash sighed as if he knew that I wasn't giving up until I got the whole story, which was true.
Okay, okay. We were together a number of years. He started getting itchy, wanted me to come out, not wanting to hide so much. I wasn't ready, wasn't going to get ready, so Steve left. Sent me a card last year. He's got a serious boyfriend who works at one of the theaters in Ashland. Seems happy enough, and that's all that matters, really.
He might be happy, but what about you? That had to hurt, him moving on. I still remembered the pain from the time I'd seen Felipe and his new squeeze at my favorite club, not even 2 months after we'd broken up.
Eh, it was what it was. No hard feelings.
Nash's eyes didn't meet mine. Felipe and I parted amicably. But I still want his twink boyfriend to run out of hair bleach and burn every meal he tries to make. Hard feelings are inevitable.
Which is why we can't start something, you and I. Can't have you holding a grudge against me.
I'm not talking about years and years here. We've both been there, done that, it sounds like. I'm just talking about a casual friendship with a side of sex. No feelings involved. I wasn't entirely sure I could stick to that, but I was sure planning to try. There was absolutely no point in getting hung up on Flint.
Mason,
I'll teach you how to cook. No more microwaved meals at midnight for you. I gave him my sweetest smile. The door jangled, and I stood. He said,
"We can't text me."
I ordered in my best facsimile of his deep, commanding voice. I walked away as if I were confident he'd do that, when, in reality, I was anything but.
Nash. Text me, he said. Just a casual friendship. Ha, ha, ha. I wasn't some kid falling for Mason's claims. No way was I texting him, like a teenager looking for a booty call. No, I was going to do my damn job and forget about him, and appealing thoughts of repeats of Tuesday night. I finished my food and dropped cash on the table, not wanting to give Mason another chance to make his case. As I headed out, Mason gave me a little wave from the bar area, where he was getting drinks for the group that had come in. I didn't wave back. No sense in encouraging his flirting ways, no matter how much I liked them. And I couldn't believe I'd told him about Steve. All my filters came off around Mason, and that wasn't a good thing. I spent a long afternoon doing paperwork, my least favorite part of the job, but necessary all the same. It was just about time for a shift change when Marta called out to me.
"We've got a report of some vandalism over at Dolly's Donut Shop. She's awfully distraught and asking for you. Can you go, or should I send Holmes when she gets in?"
"I'm on my way." I headed for the Jeep and sped off to the donut shop, which was on the other side of the square, closer to the highway. They catered to the breakfast and early lunch crowd, closing up around 2. It was unusual to see a car in her lot this time of evening. The summer sun still beat down, soft light filtering across the square even though the dinner hour had passed for most of the town.
"You came. Knew I could count on you,"
she greeted me as I got out of the Jeep. Dolly and our family went way back. Dolly's place had been a favorite of my father's. Unlike me, he'd had a sweet tooth, and favored Dolly's coffee and crullers to start his day.
"Just look at what they've done. I left my checkbook here, or I might not have seen it till morning."
She wrung her hands as she paced in front of the building. Despite being well into her 60s, her hair was still as blonde as it had been 20 years ago, and her small frame was dwarfed by her bright pink blouse and heavy necklace.
"I see." I kept my expression neutral as I took in the huge scrawled cunt on the side of the building, accompanied by some vulgar drawings. "I'm gonna have to get some pictures. Look for any evidence."
"Please do."
She followed me back to the Jeep.
"Oh, Chief, what am I going to do? People will be coming in the morning, and I don't want... They can't see that."
"Let me do my job, then we'll see about that. Power washer plus some stripper will work. Think Hal can help." She looked away.
"He's not well right now."
Ah, I took that to mean that her son was off the wagon again. A damn shame. I took the pictures I needed for evidence, and as I'd expected, I didn't find anything else worth keeping. No paint cans or left-behind possessions.
"I just can't stomach this."
Dolly started weeping in earnest.
"Everyone will see."
"Let's get a call into Leroy." I patted her arm as I pulled out my phone. Leroy was a general handyman, and an all-around good guy who'd handled graffiti issues for some of the other businesses. But unfortunately, he didn't answer his phone. I exhaled a silent groan. I'd suspected where this night was going the second I'd seen the graffiti. "Plan B," I said, keeping my voice light. "I've got a pressure washer in the garage. Let me finish out this shift, then I'll run home. Be back in a bit, and we'll get this taken care of."
"You're a good man, Chief. Just like your father. He'd be proud."
She beamed at me. That was not what I needed to hear right then. Not when I could still hear Mason's voice offering up similar praise under far different circumstances. Not when the last thing I wanted was to be like my father. I was so tired of having to live up to his image. But it was no time for grumbling. Instead, I made sure the station was squared away, then headed home, changed to work clothes and grabbed the power washer and some of the graffiti stripper that Dad kept for things just like this. Few hours later, the sun had set, and I was a sweaty mess, but the wall was clear, probably as clean as it had been in 30 years. Dolly offered me whatever I wanted on the house, but I'd never developed the stomach for her coffee, and I just didn't have an appetite for a dinner of sweets. So I was starving when I yet again turned onto my street. My gaze drifted to Mason's place without my permission. His car was in the driveway, and lights were on in the house. Nope, not stopping. I headed straight for my shower instead. Images of Mason and what we'd gotten up to in his kitchen assaulted me as the hot water pelted me. Predictably, my dick hardened, but I ignored it. I wasn't opposed to jacking off, but it wasn't something I indulged in on the regular. The way I saw it, there wasn't any sense in building up an appetite for what I couldn't have. After the shower, I padded into the kitchen.
Only thing that sounded good was some eggs. I glanced at my phone on the counter. What would it hurt? Before I could think the better of it, I texted Mason. Not for a hookup. Only a simple question. How much oil do you put down for scrambled eggs? It sure would be nice if I could do better than the sticky mess I usually made of eggs. Mason's reply was near instantaneous. Come over and I'll show you. Can't. I resisted the urge to add one of those ridiculous frowning faces to the message. Another fast reply made my phone buzz. I'm putting bacon on, and the side door's unlocked. I've got plenty of eggs for your lesson. Come over. Bacon. I'd never once cooked that without a house full of greasy smoke, and a skillet full of little black husks that might have been meat once upon a time. Man, did I love a good slice of bacon. However, I could not have Mason thinking that he could order me around. One lesson, I typed out, already going for my shoes. His reply arrived right as I locked up the house. For now, winky smiley face. Taking the back alley, I went to his side door, which was far less exposed than his front porch. Calling myself 10 kinds of fool, I rapped on the door. Unlocked, Mason reminded me as he ushered me in. He was shirtless again, wearing another pair of those maddening shorts, this time in red. Not safe to leave things unlocked. I've got my own personal police protection. He grinned at me, and my brain waged a war on how I should greet him. We both knew I wasn't there only for eggs, but he flitted back to the stove before I could stop dithering about whether to kiss him or not. You're thinking again, Nash, he scolded, waving a spatula. Now get over here and learn how to do bacon. You better remember how bossy I'm letting you be when I'm fucking you through the mattress later. His laugh was exactly what I needed. God, joking with him felt so right that it made my chest ache. That a promise? He stuck his tongue out at me. Just daring me to kiss some sense into him, show him who was really in charge. But before I could, he started in on a lecture about metal tongs and checking the bacon, and medium heat, and a bunch of other things that all ran together as I cataloged the freckles on his shoulders. He smelled like minty soap, and had a little smear of shaven cream on his neck. I flattered myself, thinking he'd gotten ready for me. Nash, you're not listening. He turned, brushing his body against mine. Nope. I reached around him, flipped the burners off. I at least knew enough to put safety first, and I scooted the pans off the heat. The whole while, I never broke eye contact with Mason, letting him know exactly what I had planned for him. He shivered as I backed him against the cabinets. God, I loved that. Loved the anticipation in his eyes right before I kissed him. He met my mouth eagerly, but seemed content to let me lead, going pliant in my embrace. I kissed him like it had been years, not days, sampling his lips both like the first time and like we'd been doing this forever. I already knew what he liked, little nibbles and just enough teeth to make him shiver again. And I exploited that knowledge until he moaned against my mouth. Mason?
Yeah,
he replied dreamily. Show me to your bed. Now.
13. Mason. I did want to teach Nash how to cook. But one look at his determined expression had me grabbing his hand and pulling him to the rear of the house and into my bedroom. I kept the space as sparely furnished as the rest of the old place, finding comfort in the clean, modern lines of my bed and white bedding. The only other furniture was the lone, matching nightstand. Nash didn't comment on the decor. Instead, He tugged me close for another blistering kiss.
Did you mean your threat?
I whispered against his lips.
I don't threaten.
He ran his hands up and down my bare sides.
Only promise.
He kissed me again, then pulled back with a frown.
But do you have supplies? Because I really was just coming to cook.
I snorted because that was such a lie.
I've got stuff.
I opened the drawer of the nightstand, tossed what we'd need on the bed. I'd made a special trip to Coos Bay earlier in the week, because no way in heck was I trusting Hauser's grocery with my personal business.
Fancy.
Nash picked up the condom box, turned it around. Latex allergy, I explained. The detail guaranteed I'd always been damned picky about who I did this with, but the second Nash had kissed me in the alley, I'd wanted this with him.
Anything else I should know?
The tone of his question was serious, and he was looking at the condom box like it might have snakes in it. I'm ticklish. I tugged at his shirt, and I hate waiting to unwrap my presents.
I'm your present?
He sounded doubtful, but let me get the shirt off him.
Oh, yeah.
I grinned at him, an obvious leer to make him smile before I went in for a kiss. Some things in life were just meant to be ogled, and Nash Flint's chest certainly qualified. Strong, broad, surprisingly tan with rosy nipples, and a lot of delicate fuzz, including a trail that led straight to his zipper, which was where I was heading next. Still kissing him, I undid his belt one-handed. I knew from the other night that we needed to seriously up his underwear game. But as long as the very basic cotton boxer briefs hit my floor in the next 20 seconds, I didn't really care. He helped me out by kicking off his shoes as I pushed down his pants. But before I could admire Nash naked, he was shoving at my shorts, hissing when he figured out that I'd gone commando after my shower.
Fuck. Mason.
Tone, almost reverential. His eyes seemed to drink me in. In a single smooth move, he sank to his knees in front of me. And I could live to 103 and never forget the sight of Nash Flint on his knees, rubbing his face against my cock. He didn't give me time to adjust to this new reality where Nash freaking Flint was going to suck me. No, he was already licking my shaft with long, purposeful strokes. Nash didn't tease or torment, just went straight for what he wanted, all business as he swallowed me down. His strong hands gripped my hips as he started a slow, steady rhythm. I was glad for his grip. It kept me from floating to the ceiling. Gradually, one of his hands swept around to stroke up and down my crack, deliberate strokes of his broad fingers.
Yes.
The combination of his hot mouth, the sight of him doing this for me, and those devilish fingers had me skating far too close to the edge, far too fast. Nash didn't make it any easier when he removed his hand, only to have it return with slick fingers, all while never losing his rhythm on my cock, fingers grazing my rim. He had me panting, and my balls tingling.
Nash, don't wanna...
Then don't.
He pulled back long enough to wink at me, cocky bastard.
Bed, now, on your knees.
I wasn't usually one to take orders in bed, but something about Nash's firm voice made my cock throb and my pulse hum. I complied, tossing the comforter to the floor as I climbed onto the bed. I got on my hands and knees, and Nash was there in an instant, kissing down my spine. His fingers were back to torture me, circling my rim in a way that had me shivering all over again. He took his time before pressing inside, slippery fingers heading straight for my gland. Felt good, but I rocked impatiently.
Just go, I urged. I'd never liked prep much. I liked the actual fucking, loved having been fucked. But the getting started business was always something I'd just as soon fast-forward through. My body didn't always cooperate, though, and I willed myself to relax as Nash took care of the condom. Unlike a lot of my lovers, Nash seemed to get the balance I needed between hurry-up and patience, getting into position and stroking my back with his free hand.
"Rock back when you're ready."
The command in his tone had me going pliant in a way that my brain's commands hadn't managed.
"That's it."
He praised each small movement of my hips, hand soothing my back.
"So good."
His praise was a drug, making me bolder, and I took him deeper and deeper, working past the stretch to the good part where he pressed up against my gland. "Yes, that."
"Ready for more?"
Nash's voice was the same blend of gentle firm as his hand on my side.
"Yeah."
I arched my back.
"Need it."
I moaned as he pulled back before thrusting forward again, an unerring stroke right against all the places that felt like liquid lightning.
"Feels so good."
Nash's groans mingled with my own.
"Nash, Nash,"
I panted, searching for something. I didn't even know what.
"I've got you."
His hand found my dick, matching the insistent rhythm of his hips. I moaned again, a low, inhuman noise.
"That's it. Let me hear you."
His thrusts sped up, rewarding me with each gasp and whimper. I didn't even recognize the noises coming from my mouth. The hand on my dick was sure and strong and made my hips buck, chasing more sensation.
"Can you come this way?"
His tone said he already knew the answer, but wanted to hear me say it.
"Yes. Oh, fuck."
My eyes squished shut. That wasn't always the case for me, but with Nash's unerring skills, it was more a question of holding off long enough for him to get there, too.
"Tell me what you need,"
he ordered.
"Harder. God, please go harder."
This needy, begging thing totally wasn't me either, but Nash turned me inside out, made me not recognize myself. Keeping my eyes shut, I gave in to the fuck. My head fell forward, but Nash kept me from collapsing entirely.
"Need you."
"That's it."
His thrusts sped up, hand on my hips, tilting me to the perfect angle.
"Want to come?"
The tingle was back in my balls, and my ass tightened as everything went white hot.
"Do it!"
"Oh, thank fuck!"
Nash didn't torture me and make me wait. His hand on my cock added a little twist on the upstroke that had my moans turning into whines.
"Nash!"
My whole body trembled, right there on the edge.
"Come on, Mason."
The way he growled my name, forceful and plaintive at the same time, did me in. Body clenching hard, I came, wave after wave of intense pleasure that wrung me out. My rubbery limbs gave way, and I was vaguely aware of Nash's thrusts getting erratic. He wasn't loud like me, but his satisfied groan as he collapsed on me made me shudder all over again.
"Fuck. I'm squashing you."
Nash pulled out gently, but I still winced.
"Sorry."
He tugged me out of the damp spot I'd landed in, gathering me up in a clumsy embrace, pressing kisses to the back of my neck. It was almost too sweet. So I cracked an eye open and looked over my shoulder.
"My mattress appears to be in one piece. I'm disappointed."
Nash's laugh was a deep rumble that rolled through me.
"Smart ass. We'll shoot for bed breaking next time."
Next time. I liked the sound of that far more than I should, which was dangerous.
And hey, you promised me food. I'm the one who should be pouting.
Nash shoved at my side, which only made me burrow into him more.
I'll feed you, but I really need a quick shower first. I'm pretty sure that I don't trust you with my kitchen while I get clean, so you better come too.
I smiled at him like my command had nothing to do with worry that he'd bolt.
No, nothing like that at all.
Shower? Together?
He gave me a bemused smile. New concept for you? I sat slowly, loving the delicious ache when I moved, but what I really wanted to do was sleep for a week with Nash surrounding me.
That wasn't happening, though, and it was time to rejoin reality.
Nash finally gave a nod, eyes looking reluctant.
You've probably got more wild stories than me.
It's a shower, Nash, not an orgy.
I held out a hand to help him up, then led him to the little bathroom. Nash's discomfort only seemed to grow once we were in the small space.
Spa-like it was decidedly not.
Similar to the kitchen, the only renovation it had seen had been decades ago, and piecemeal at best. I wished I had Felipe's Rose Quarter condo's huge bath with the walk-in shower. That might distract Nash from whatever was going on in his head. I couldn't worry too much about that. I really did need a shower, because sticky with lube was not my favorite sensation. Leaving Nash to wrestle with himself, I cranked the shower on and climbed in the tub, leaving the curtain open.
"Those are ducks,"
Nash finally said, gesturing at my cheerful yellow and blue curtain with a rubber duck motif. I let Lilac pick it out when we took her to the Walmart in Coos Bay. I shrugged and grabbed the soap. I'm not really much on decor.
I noticed.
A little smile teased at the corner of Nash's mouth. Seeming to come to some sort of decision, Nash stepped in behind me. However, any fantasies I had about leisurely kissing under the water were lost to the realities of two men, one of whom seemed bound and determined not to touch. In a tiny space. Sighing, I finished my washing, rinsed the soap, and passed it to Nash. I hopped out to give him more access to the water. Maybe someday I could introduce him to the pleasures of shower sex. Someday. There I went again with the dangerous thinking.
I'm putting the bacon back on,
I said as I toweled off. Take your time. I'll show you how to do the eggs when you get in there. I pulled on a fresh pair of shorts because I somehow knew that Nash wouldn't be down with naked cooking. I put the bacon on the heat and whisked the eggs before he wandered in, back in his jeans. But no shirt. Now that was a nice surprise, even if his chest was a distraction from the task at hand.
Sorry.
He rubbed his face.
Didn't mean to get weird on you.
You didn't. I brushed a kiss across his mouth, although I totally want to show you how fun a shower can be sometime. I said it casually, like we'd already agreed to a repeat. I'd known once was not going to be enough with Nash Flint, no matter how stupid doing this on the regular was. Nash made a non-committal noise that I decided to take as a maybe, since it wasn't an outright shutdown of the idea.
Did the bacon get ruined?
He asked, peering over my shoulder. Nope. I launched back into the cooking lesson, trying not to enjoy the brush of his bare skin against mine too much. It was the best kind of strange, cooking together after the bed shaking, if not bed-breaking, sex, feeling little twinges in my muscles to remind me of how hard we'd gone. Other than the quasi-freak-out over sharing the shower, Nash seemed calmer now, and it was easy to delude myself into thinking that things could always be this natural. Here. You try. I handed him the spatula as the eggs started to come together in the skillet. His whisking was adorably tentative. We worked together to serve up
the bacon and eggs, and then ate again at my little table. I could get used to this way too easily. Shirtless Nash across from me, memories of the sex dancing in my head, simple food that tasted better because it was shared.
I should let you sleep,
Nash said as we finished the dishes.
I don't want to overstay my welcome.
You're not. I captured his mouth for a kiss that told him in no uncertain terms that I could be up for another round. But right when I felt his muscles go pliant, felt him waver about leaving, my phone rang over on the counter, frowning. Nash released me. I scooped up the phone, because this time of night it had to be an emergency. The screen flashed with a familiar number, and my stomach sank all the way down to the scarred linoleum.
Jimmy!
What? I barked into the phone. Nash was already out of the kitchen, most likely headed in search of his shirt and shoes. Bolting, just like I'd known he would.
Sorry how late it is.
No, you're not. I groaned and leaned back against the counter. What do you need?
I forgot that Dad has a doctor's appointment tomorrow in Coos Bay. Chester needs me.
Jimmy, I am not your daycare. A rustling sound alerted me to a frowning Nash heading for my side door. I couldn't stop him without alerting Jimmy that I had company.
Fuck!
Jimmy went on about how this was a one-shot thing, the last time he'd need me, he promised, but my attention was more on Nash, who mouthed, "Text me if you need me," before slipping out the door. If you need me.
Nope.
I couldn't afford to need Nash Flint, much as my body liked his. Jimmy was just one more reminder of that.
14. Nash.
So glad you could make it, Chief.
Everly greeted me near the door of the visitor center. I was there for another early morning Chamber of Commerce meeting, a command appearance sparked by the latest round of vandalism. But it wasn't Everly's sunny smile that held my attention. Over by the far wall, Mason was setting up a display of breads and muffins, and a little sign that advertised the tavern. He wore dress clothes again, and I wasn't sure what it was, but him in a pressed shirt did something weird to my insides. Maybe it was how it made him look older, more worldly, but it could also be that it was just plain hot. The peak of skin where he'd left the collar of the blue shirt unbuttoned, the muscled forearms poking out of rolled back sleeves, the ass, which I now knew was more muscular than it looked, defined by the khaki pants. As if he sensed me checking him out, he turned, giving me and Everly a smile. No winks, no slyness, only his usual friendliness, suitable for casual acquaintanceship. But it still jangled me all up. The other night his smiles had been more intimate, meant for me alone, and hell if the memory of the impromptu cooking lesson wasn't equally as seductive as the memory of fucking him. I hadn't been a coward after this latest bout of insanity. I'd gone to the tavern for lunch yesterday, but Mason had been out, which left me to Ringer's brisk service. And okay, I'd been a bit of a coward, leaving while Mason was on the phone. But I couldn't take the risk of that brother of his coming over. Honestly, that should have been the wet blanket on any remaining lust I had for Mason. But one side of him standing there in those clothes with a grin that was nothing but friendly, and I was back being a prisoner to my desire for him. Everly clapped her hands and called everyone to order. Mason took a seat on the opposite side of the room, and I refused to feel even one iota disappointed that he wasn't closer to me. I couldn't go thinking like that.
As all of you know, the 4th of July is coming. We've advertised in several regional publications this year, and we're hopeful for a big turnout.
The 4th was always a huge tourism weekend all around the coast, and while I appreciated patriotism as much as anyone else, it was one of my least favorite weeks of the year. Market increase in drunk driving, bar fights, parking violations, illegal beach bonfires, and general mayhem that had the whole department pulling long hours. Everly asked for my input on our policing plan.